from WBUR Boston. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Americans of all stripes, rich and poor, from all over this land break their backs as parents and as young students to make the money and get the grades for a college education. And they keep paying after graduation, often heavily and for years. The education is important, but the costs have grown out of hand, just too much. Now there's fresh talk about reining it all in. This hour On Point, getting a grip on the cost of college in America. You can join the conversation. Are you in hock right now paying for a college education for yourself or your child? How much is too much? And what's your idea to make college cheaper? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. The president has been making a lot of noise about this lately in his State of the Union address. And again, last Friday, President Obama was at the University of Michigan, where tuition alone for out-of-staters is close to $38,000. He warned colleges they've got to stop raising tuition rates so high, or else.
From now on, I'm telling Congress, we should steer federal campus-based aid to those colleges that keep tuition affordable, provide good value, serve their students well. We are putting colleges on notice. You can't assume that you'll just jack up tuition every single year. If you can't stop tuition from going up, then the funding you get from taxpayers each year will go down. We should push colleges to do better. We should hold them accountable if they don't.
The president talking big in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and there's a lot in the air these days. People hurting from this. At the same time, people don't want the United States to lose the quality of its vaunted higher education system. Joining me first today from Washington is Jeff Salingo, editorial director of the Chronicle of Higher Education, author of the blog The Next, about innovation in higher education. Jeff, thanks very much for being with us.
It's good to be here, Tom.
First, a little interpretation. The president is putting this on the public agenda. I mean, every family or student or recent graduate paying those loans, or maybe not so recent and still paying the loans, they all know the weight of this. But what is putting it so high on the president's agenda right now? Why is he making so much noise about this?
Well, I think he sees this as a re-election issue. This is an issue that is big with suburban swing voters. Most of the proposals that the president talked about last week are squarely aimed at middle-class voters and not low-income voters. So I think he sees this as a great election year issue.
What is he essentially proposing here? He's rolling out new plans. He was very broad about them in his State of the Union address. What's the president suggesting?
There's still not a lot of details, but most of this would affect campus-based aid, which in reality is a very small part of the aid that goes to students. So it doesn't include student loans from the federal government. It doesn't include Pell Grants. It includes work-study money, Perkins loan money, and similar monies like that, which actually make up a pretty small portion of federal aid. And basically what the president is saying is that if schools increase their tuition by too high of an amount over a specific period of time, they're going to be punished by not getting as much of that aid, and it's going to be go to schools that don't raise their tuition by as much.
What has the reaction to this, whatever its scale, what's the reaction been in the university world?
The university world hates it. There have been proposals, similar proposals over the years, to shame colleges that raise their money, that raise their tuition by too much by putting them on a watch list. There have been a number of proposals over the years to try to rein in increases in tuition, and each time the higher education lobby here in Washington has successfully fought it back, calling them price controls, and that's exactly what they're doing now. They basically think the free market should decide tuition.
Does the free market decide tuition? I mean, after all, here's a clip right here where the president alludes to what he calls the federal subsidy of those big tuitions and says it can't go on. Let's listen for just a moment.
We can't just keep on subsidizing skyrocketing tuition. If tuition is going up faster than inflation, faster than even healthcare is going up, no matter how much we subsidize it, sooner or later we're going to run out of money. And that means that others have to do their part. Colleges and universities need to do their part to keep costs down as well.
Enthusiastic applause there from the University of Michigan student body. But there's the president saying, kind of suggesting, this isn't a free market. There's federal subsidies woven all through our higher education.
Well, and I think I'm not an economist, but I don't think it's a free market either. I mean, first of all, the free market has been, quote unquote, allowed to work for the past few decades, and especially over the last decade. And what did we see over the last decade? We saw more and more students going to college and college prices just going up and up and up. So if it's been allowed to work, it hasn't worked very well. And secondly, he's right. I mean, the federal government subsidizes both public and private colleges to the tune of, you know, in some cases, 80, 85, 90% of their revenue comes in some form from government grants or loans. And so if it's truly a free market, then those presidents who are against this probably should give up those subsidies.
Are we at a breaking point with this? What do you find in the polls of Americans in the numbers of what colleges are charging and people can afford to pay?
We probably are reaching some sort of breaking point, but the problem is that college is worth it, and parents and families know that, and so they're kind of willing to go into tremendous amounts of debt to go to college. I think one change we are seeing in the last year or two is what I would call the value of college, and I think that parents and students, last decade they said, we'll go to any college at any price, and we'll go into debt as much as we need to. I think now they're saying, what are we getting in return? So the Harvards and the places in the world where they get many more qualified applicants than they have places for, they're always going to be able to charge whatever they want. But most other institutions in this country, most other schools won't, because students are finally going to say, it's not really worth $50,000 a year to go to X university because I'm not really going to get much in return.
And when you are out of college with those debts and without a job, that can be a very acute sensation.
Yes, and you know, and there's a lot of talk right now about kind of reforming the student loan system. And if anything's going to change in the next couple of years, and President Obama didn't even talk at all about this, you know, $110 billion was borrowed in student loans last year. 110.
Wow. And
you know, we're now surpassed $1 trillion in terms of outstanding student loan debt. So if anything's going to happen in the next couple of years, there's going to have to be some sort of reform of the student loan system. And I think there's going to be some move toward more income contingent loans. You know, President Obama announced a couple of months ago that he was going to expand that program, but it's still a very small part of the federal loan program.
Jeff Salingo is editorial director at the Chronicle of Higher Education, author of the blog The Next, joining us from Washington there. Jeff, thanks very much for being with us.
No problem. It was good to be here.
We're going to go to a couple of big thinkers on the cost of university education and what it needs to be. The president, in just a moment, Nancy Zimpher, she's chancellor of the State University of New York system, joins us. Biggest higher education system in the country. But here was the president at the University of Michigan again last week, putting a challenge out, saying, look, we've got a race to the top for elementary education. We're going to bring that dynamic to higher education as well. Tough challenge to the states, as he put it rhetorically anyway, here.
Today, we're going to launch a race to the top for college affordability. We're telling the states, if you can find new ways to bring down the cost of college and make it easier for more students to graduate, we'll help you do it. We will give you additional federal support if you are doing a good job of making sure that all of you aren't loaded up with debt when you graduate from college.
And again, the students love the sound of that. Nancy Zimpher joins us right now from New York City, Chancellor of the State University of New York, largest higher education system in the country. She was one of a dozen higher ed leaders to meet in December with President Obama at the White House to talk about ways to bring down the cost of higher education in this country. Chancellor Zimpher, thank you very much for being with us.
Well, thanks. I'm delighted to be with you.
What do you make of the president's challenge right there? It would seem to be right in the grill of an administrator like yourself, a leader like yourself.
Well, I think in general, the higher education community is and ought to be grateful that the president is putting these issues on the table, because as everybody knows, it is a balance between the states being able to support higher education and particularly public education and their decreasing ability or capacity to do that in this economic environment, and then the role and responsibility of colleges around tuition. One of the reasons I'm delighted that this issue is on the table is because this is the very issue that New New York struggled with last year and the year before, and in fact, over decades. How do we create a balance between what the state can commit and what the institutions need to do to, as Secretary Duncan said, reduce costs, increase productivity, and then make sure we have the capacity for access and completion. So we actually put on the table legislation, thanks to Governor Cuomo, called rational tuition. So it has several characteristics. You've got to commit to a fair, which means modest increase over a period of time.
Mm-hmm.
Second, it should be predictable so that students can plan the 4 or 5 years that they're
right.
going to be in college and their parents. So we actually got a 5-year tuition plan with a cap, which is very important,
mm-hmm.
and then with a commitment from the state that they will not, on the one hand, let you raise tuition, and on the other hand, give you a big cut. And people around the country call that maintenance of effort, that states will maintain their platform of support. And then finally, we are giving the first dollar from these tuition increases to close the gap for any student who is fully consuming a Pell Grant or what we call New York a tuition assistance program.
Chancellor, we see that program, but I have to put it to you that the president's not, you say you're delighted, but he's not really talking about so much about reduced state support, though that's a huge factor here. He's talking about what students and their families are paying. Doesn't that put the emphasis, you know, on the cost side more than the state support side? I mean, doesn't that leave you hanging out there a little bit?
Actually, I think he did talk about state support. He didn't talk about it in the dimensions that he talked mm-hmm. about our responsibility. But I do want to say these big systems, California, New York, of course, our tuition for one full year of instruction is $5,270.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about getting a grip on the cost of American college education. It's crushing families, students, graduates. What should we do about it? People really feeling this. Here's Baruch College in New York City last November. Students out to protest tuition hikes. Police move in to make arrests. The students took up a chant here. United will never be defeated, but a lot of students are up against some pretty big loans right now, and their families carrying a big burden as well. We have with us today Nancy Zimpfer, Chancellor of the State University of New York. It's the biggest higher education system, state system in the country. She was one of those who met with President Obama before the State of the Union speech. This was back in November. She's proud to tell us that in her system, four-year college charge, $5,270 in annual tuition. There are many higher than that out there, and everybody knows it. Also with us right now from Idaho Falls, Idaho, is Henry Eyring. He's co-author with Clay Christensen of The Innovative University, Changing the DNA of Higher Education from the Inside Out. He's an administrator at Brigham Young University, Idaho, BYU, Idaho. And special thanks to Radio KID in Idaho Falls today for letting Henry join us from their studio. They had to move their morning schedule around to do that, so we really appreciate it. Henry Eyring, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Tom.
It's great to have you with us. The president's talking about bringing some leverage to bear on American universities to get them to bring down their tuition, their costs. Is that enough to put us on the right track here?
Well, the good news is that not only do we have, as Nancy said, the benefit of the president focusing attention on this subject, we have new technologies that are coming to fruition that will allow us to lower the cost of a college education while maintaining its quality.
You're talking about taking college education online. Does that mean off the quad, away from the stadium, away from the fancy dorms and the climbing wall? Is that the idea?
Possibly, but not necessarily. In fact, that's one of the things that's important. If you want to have a nuanced conversation about this, you need to realize it's not either or. There is the opportunity for working adults, for instance, to earn a degree now entirely online, and for-profit institutions in particular have focused on that. But there's also now the opportunity to take the best of a campus education and augment it with online learning, make it even better and less expensive.
augmented campus education. Nancy Zimfer, what you describe a kind of success here at 5,000 and change in tuition, but you know where tuitions have been going nationally. You know what a lot of students are up against. What is driving that? Why is the rate of tuition increase so often so much higher than the rate of inflation, Nancy?
Well, if you break down our costs, they are mostly people costs. 80 to 90% of what universities do is hire faculty and full and part-time faculty, and so those costs continue to escalate. And then we have a lot of fixed costs that, keep the lights on. And that is why I think what the president wants is some real creative solutions. Just as Henry mentioned, I also think we need to reform the student loan program, because we know that students take loans out that don't necessarily end up paying for college credit or paying for books or paying for room. They might pay for something ancillary that a student needs, and then they accrue this incredible debt. So we're looking very hard at administrative costs. We're trying to shift at least 5% or $100 million of our administrative costs into offering more courses, more programs, as Henry said, more online. We're trying to break down the cost of remediation. This is when students come to college, but they're not prepared for college work, and we're trying to shift some of those expenses to support our friends in K-12 so that we correct remediation where it occurs. Because, students exhaust student loan on remedial courses, then they come up short when they finally get into their legitimate degree program. We're trying to create paid internships within our system, cooperative education, where students work for the companies they hope to have hire them when they graduate. That helps you bring down any of the cost of college and make sure that you have a job when you get out of college. So I do think that the president is asking us, the higher education community, not only to hold the tuition cost down, and I gave you a formula for that that Governor Cuomo has done in New York, mm-hmm. but hold down these other costs, the costs of doing business that have caused this escalation.
Henry Eyring, in Idaho Falls, do we have to reimagine what we expect from a university? I mean, you talk about a couple of different models in your book with Clay Christensen, The Innovative University, and you hold out sort of what you describe as kind of the Harvard model, and the others sort of your model, BYU-Idaho. What's the difference there, and what's the reimagining or the different conception between the two, and what's the implication cost-wise?
Well, it's a reality of American higher education. Its success is founded in part in emulating a fantastic model created by Harvard and other elite institutions over the last 100 years. It's very powerful, but it's very expensive. And as community colleges and technical colleges have emulated it and climb what we refer to as the Carnegie ladder, offering more graduate degrees, focusing more on research, the education becomes more expensive. That's not a bad thing, but it's an expensive thing, and it can be bad if too many colleges and universities take that approach and abandon more fundamental forms of education. It's why the president talks so much about community colleges and their role. And it's why we do need to reimagine what's possible. Some of the institutions that have been emulating Harvard will have more success if they reimagine themselves as serving a different constituency.
And what would that different profile look like if you moved away from the sort of full, deluxe buffet to something else? What's the difference?
Well, an example that we offer up at BYU-Idaho is an institution which, when it made the jump from being a 2-year school to a 4-year school, eliminated its quite successful junior college intercollegiate athletic program, replaced that with a host of intramural activities that involves almost the entire student body, a third of the cost of what we were paying to play intercollegiate athletics. We also operate year-round, 3 full semesters, which is bad Latin. But it's very good economics because you save the cost of you serve 50% more students without building new facilities. Mm-hmm. You don't pay more for faculty benefits, health benefits, and retirement. And you focus, in our case, on undergraduate education. We do it at quite high quality and very low cost.
Nancy, do you think is this reaching a kind of a crisis point where families, students, college administrators are ready to shake up the whole model, the whole mold for what we've traditionally expected, come to expect in college education?
Well, I think the president has his finger on the pulse of America, and I think we have to be responsive. We need nothing more than the need we have to have fully educated citizens. Every study in the country indicates the double earning power of someone who goes to college, completes a degree, than someone who stops at high school. So I think we're paying attention to these opportunities. Many universities are offering round-the-clock and round-the-year sort of hybrid programs, as Henry talks about it. One of the things I think is possible is to be more like a system where these concerns and these cost savings come across a system of institutions. You would expect me to say that, but I can tell you it's kind of a word we've been using lately, systemness, that we can do more to curb costs, to make sure kids can transfer from community colleges to four-year colleges. We're even dipping down to high schools. We've created early college high schools, which is kind of a 2+2+2 model. You take the 2 years of high school and you blend it with the first 2 years of college, and then you make it easy for students to transfer to four-year degree programs. And that's something multiple universities have to do working together. So in this call to action, I would add, we've got to work smarter together.
We've got a lot of response here online. Ashwin says, agreeing with you there, Henry. Ashwin writes, get rid of college football, all the accoutrements that go with it, coach salaries, stadiums, divert the money to scholarships. Robert on the internet site says, education is packaged information. It's obscene that costs should rise at a time when information has never been so easily transmittable. Dan says, any university institution receiving federal and state funds should put a cap on executive pay, and that's echoed throughout our listeners' comments here. Let's go to our callers as well. Jim in Nashville, Tennessee. Jim, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Say, I'm going to re-ask a question that you already asked, if I may, because it never seems to get addressed in the detail that seems appropriate to the conversation, and that is, what is driving this disproportionately high rate of increase in costs? And not glossing over it.
Salaries. We'll dig in on it again. Henry, I mean, people look at it, and it's just year after year, it has been way above the rate of inflation. And, you know, people just don't understand. Let's dig in. Why?
Well, there are a number of factors. Intercollegiate athletics have been mentioned, and executive pay, although those are relatively small things compared to a decision to engage your faculty heavily in research. Research is a vital function, but again, an expensive one. It means faculty spend less time in the classroom and need funds to perform the research. And if you can cover all of that with federal grants, that's wonderful. But if not, there are few sources of revenue as large as tuition. And if you're going to pay the bills as your costs rise, you're almost certainly going to have to raise tuition on your undergraduates.
But isn't research a fundamental role of American higher education? Isn't it part of what has, or did, keep this country at the global forefront economically, intellectually?
Absolutely. But as Nancy points out, we need to think more in system terms. And the New York system, state system, is a great example. They have excellent research universities. But the vast majority of institutions over which Nancy presides are community colleges and universities that are focused on undergraduate education. We need to go back to that kind of system. It also exists in California and other places. But the tendency is for an individual school not to want to play their role in the system and rather climb up and be more like the research universities. That causes tuition pressure.
Nancy Zimfer, Chancellor Zimfer, what do you say to our caller in Nashville who just wants to understand and more fundamentally what's driving these costs?
Yeah, I absolutely want to talk to that, because I think in the great public institutions, the flagships, the Research One universities, there's a great deal more balance in the professorial role than people have imagined. We have much more engagement of students in laboratories. In fact, we hire students to work in our research laboratories, which actually benefits them.
So you're saying it's not just research driving this, obviously.
No, I think it's much more balanced, and there is is, as Henry points out, this elite image of what universities are doing, and I think it's much more integrated, and our students tell us that. So back to the listener's question, that which is not spoken of greatly is the balance between state support and tuition while you have personnel and facilities costs. Many of the campuses at the State University of New York were constructed around the 70s. We can't keep up with the maintenance of these buildings, so we have a lot of diversified costs. But we are really committed to bring those costs down by clustering our procurement. We're buying things collectively across campuses. We're even proposing that we have shared presidencies, that a president of one campus might also serve as president of an adjacent campus. I only mention that not because it's particularly popular, because you might imagine it is not. But we,
with presidents anyway.
Well, even with campuses, they want their identity,
they want
their alumni association, they want their sports team. But we've got to turn the way we administer college upside down, and that's where a big system can really, really deliver.
We'll look more at that. Of course, not everything is in a big system. Let's go to Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Joseph, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hello, thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
My point that I would like to inquire about is I went to Penn State University, and it is one of the most expensive public universities in our nation. And I do understand that they do try to cut costs in a lot of areas, but due to a lot of donations through our alumni association and other alumni, I feel like that Penn State does waste or they keep on increasing tuition no matter how much money they tend to make, which is very disconcerting. And my second big point that I do want to inquire about is, well, I pay $60,000 in private loans alone to go to university, and I have $30,000 in interest on top of that, which is making my payments extraordinary.
So you're you're up toward $100,000 in debt in total.
Not including my federal loans, which is another additional
$20,000. Oh, wow.
So it's quite exasperating every time when I take my paychecks and it goes straight to Sallie Mae and, you know, the government. It gets tough, and I kind of wonder how that interest rate, which is so extremely high, if they worked on that angle as well. And I mean, I do agree that the universities should continue to focus on cutting costs and also, you know, providing that same services that they have been, such as Penn State, which is, they're very good at what they do. However, I do believe, with how much money, you wouldn't believe how much they get from alumni, and they still increase tuition. I mean, they had a drastic tuition increase 2 years ago.
And Joseph, when did you graduate with this $110,000, $120,000 in debt? When did you graduate?
This past May.
Joseph, we wish you good luck, and I appreciate your call. Henry Eyring, I mean, this is not an unusual story these days for American graduates to have that kind of debt load. People talk about the value of a college education, but does that add up? I mean, we hope it does for Joseph, but overall, does that add up, that kind of debt coming out?
Well, the challenge is that you've got to look at the debt in terms of the earning power of the education. And unfortunately, college costs have been rising, but the value of a college degree has not risen at the same rate. And so it's a real problem for those students who've borrowed heavily, and it's why we've got to turn the tide on costs and have that reflected in student tuition.
Is there a break?
We also have to unpack what the loans are used for. The average debt of public four-year baccalaureate institutions is around $22,000, about $28,000 for private institutions. And I think, as Jeff spoke to earlier, reforming the use of student loans, Pell and most state loan programs are very restricted to the actual cost of college and not the ancillary cost of life while you're in college. But I also want to put back on the table the president's support for work study, which has always been known to be a very good not only source of income for students, but students who are working on campus tend to graduate more on time. They're more efficient with their time. And this idea that we would expand massively, the idea that you could have a paid internship in college, not only tees you up for your career, but helps relieve some of the burdens.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about getting a grip on the cost of American college education. The president has been talking a lot about it lately. What actually happens? Well, in recent years and more, it's been tuition increases. We'll see where it goes. Henry Eyring joins us today from Idaho Falls, Idaho, and the facilities there of Radio KID in Idaho Falls. He's co-author with Clay Christensen of The Innovative University, Changing the DNA of Higher Education from the Inside Out. Works there at Brigham Young University, Idaho. Nancy Zimfer is with us, Chancellor of the State University of New York, the largest higher education system in the country. She sat down with President Obama and a dozen heads of American colleges and universities in December in the White House to think about what might be done here. Here's one guy who dropped out of college talking about college, Bill Gates at the Techonomy Conference every year goes on. Here he was in 2010 in Lake Tahoe saying that in 5 years, the best college education would come from the web, not from the college campus or classroom.
What are we trying to do? We're trying to take the education, the $200,000 education that is increasingly hard to get because there's less money for it and the capacity's not there, and we're trying to provide it to every kid who wants it. And only technology can bring that down, you know, not just to 20,000, but to 2,000. So yes, place-based activity in that college thing will be, you know, five times less important than it is today.
I don't know if we're on that path, that track at this point, Chancellor Zimfer, but you know, of course Bill Gates would look to a technology solution, and our listeners are saying as well, you know, we've got all this great infotech, let's use it. What about maybe we just need a diminished role for place-based education, learn from wherever you are. How big a factor do you think that can ultimately be, Nancy Zimfer?
I really think we're going to settle into a hybrid pattern. I once heard as long as 18-year-olds are under the roof of a household, there will always be a residential campus for them, you know, that the 18-year-old is ready to fly the coop, so to speak. But what we have is a new generation of students who do multitask. They do online. They do campus. We have students who are enrolled in two or three campuses simultaneously. So the key for us is to get our product out there and make it accessible to students, whether they are place-bound or whether they prefer to do it online. I think to suggest that college degree is not going to be important in the future, that you're really going to learn through technology and on the job, really flies in the face of what another one of our problems relative to the cost of college, and that is that a lot of people don't complete. So they spend their money, they take their loans, and they don't accrue a degree or a certificate. And that's the coin of the realm. And so they've spent money, but they've spent it aimlessly.
They got the debt, but not the payoff.
The benefits. So another big issue that President Obama is very concerned about, and certainly we are in higher education, is this idea of completion. And so, you know, when he talks about a race to the top for higher ed, my hope is that we underscore the necessary relationship between what happens in K-12 to get kids ready for college and what we as universities ought to do to help that.
You mean they're dropping out because they're not really ready for college? You've got the cost of remediation, but they've got the headwind that ultimately drags them out.
Right. But I'm also saying, and I do want our listeners to hear that, I consider that a responsibility of higher education, too, because we prepare the teachers who are teaching students coming to college ready or not. So we shouldn't teach twice. We should close the gaps. We should seal the leaks in the education pipeline and give everybody access to the American dream. And to do that, we have to work together as a, you know, frankly, I don't think we have a public system of education in this country, but we need to put together the work of our early childhood, K-12, and universities to give everybody an opportunity for success.
Charleston, South Carolina, Layton is calling. Layton, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Well, it's my pleasure. I've enjoyed this discussion. I was calling about a particular issue that I observe. I have served as chairman of a statewide commission on higher education that oversaw the state-supported schools in South Carolina. And the degree of authority in that arrangement that we have in South Carolina is very different than the authority in some of my neighboring states. In North Carolina, there's a Board of Regents, and a similar situation in Georgia. College and university trustees administrators and trustees, if left alone, will want to expand, and will want to expand in ways that the state might not be best off for. The system might not be as well served by the old adage, if you've got one, I want one.
Right.
And we're seeing that in our state right now with the creation of a third medical school, which has been sort of flung together on its own, more or less, and it's very questionable about whether our state needs this or can afford it.
What is the antidote to that dynamic, Layton?
A statewide board of regents with some authority that's respected by the funding organization, which in our state is the legislature.
Layton, I appreciate your call. Henry Eyring, that goes back to Nancy Zimfer's sort of call for more sort of systemic approach to this, but there are a lot of fiefs out there that don't want to surrender to general oversight.
Well, it is a challenge.
I agree with Layton. You would expect that I would, but let me just say, as to another law school, another medical school, one of the things a system can do is really link program investment to the job sectors that exist in the state. And I mean by that not just business and industry, but the needs of social service organizations as well. And if we can closer match our program offerings to the sector demands in our state, I think it would tell us whether we need more doctors, more nurses, which, of course, we think we do in New York. We have a health crisis of major proportion in this country serving high need patients. But I do think we have to get more scientific, if you will, about and I think Henry was saying this, about the portfolio of programs we offer. Are they the right ones for our future economy?
Henry Eyring, how do you create a dynamic where you get sort of consolidation of oversight that might push back against inefficiency or duplication?
Well, I think it comes partly from external pressure. And so it is frankly fortunate that we're seeing new forms of competition, that we have political leaders such as President Obama calling for reform, and we have pain being inflicted. It's unfortunate, but it is going to, I think, bring to the fore this question of what an institution can really afford to do, what it does well, and also what technologies and innovations it has at hand for doing what it does and can do well less expensively.
What do you make of the president? Part of what he's proposing is a kind of system where students can see, where colleges have to make transparent the cost of the education that they're offering and then the track record of student earnings once they leave that college or university. Is that valuable, Henry Eyring, for students trying to see what it's really worth?
Well, absolutely. It's essential. It's analogous to putting nutrition facts on a bag of pretzels. We definitely need students to know what they're consuming. But as Nancy's pointed out, we also have the challenge that there are subsidies here, and that creates price insensitivity. I think it was Jeff who mentioned this, that we have the challenge of the federal government and the state government through its subsidies blunting some of that, the responsibility that we need to see and feel from students. So it's a combination of information, but also calling our students to be more responsible and their parents.
Responsible in what exactly? In the degree of debt they take on? Is that what you're saying?
Yes. The degree of debt, and Nancy also mentioned the things, excuse me, for which they're spending money. we have the challenge that we are giving dollars that can be used equally for tuition or for living expenses or for the purchase of a flat screen TV. We also have a model where it's assumed that a residential education is 8 full semesters or more, usually takes longer than that, where you live away from home that entire time. You're away perhaps from a better job market. We're a rural institution, for instance. It's hard to find work here for all of our 15,000 students. And so we're going to see a model in the future. It is somewhere between what we've done traditionally and what Bill Gates described, and that is students will do what they do in consuming everything else, and that is they'll decide what form of education they want at a given time. Sometimes that will be face-to-face. They'll do some of their experience on campus. They'll do some living at home while they're holding down a part-time job. And that will give them not only greater flexibility in their choices, but potentially lower overall cost to their education.
And do not presume a kind of luxe lifestyle in the midst of that. Maybe nothing close to it. Dave in Beverly, Massachusetts. Dave, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Yeah, my son is in the in UMass Lowell, his final year.
Yeah.
And last year, listening to a report on education, I hear the chancellor's making $55 million. It's fairly obvious that that's something to consider. And just wondering, you know, how your panel feels about that, based on the idea that instead of, you know, big business, this is big education. Instead of, you know, a state school, if this fellow were to take $25 million, give this $30 million to pay for those buildings and maybe take something off the tuition.
Dave, we take the point. There are some big salaries at the top of the heap here. I'm afraid there may be an order of magnitude problem with $55 million. I don't know about that, but they can get big. We'll look at it. Let me get one more here. Kirsten in Somerville, Massachusetts. Kirsten, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I am a professor at a research university here in Massachusetts, and I wanted to respond to the claim made by one of your guests earlier that the sort of the main factor to blame for the massive explosion in college costs is paying for faculty to do their research and pushy jobs where they don't have to be in the classroom and this
right,
sort of thing.
Right.
And, you know, these kinds of conversations usually feature administrators speaking and not faculty members speaking. And so I just wanted to...
We're glad you have the floor, Kirsten. What's your perspective?
Well, over the last 30 years, the number of teaching hours in this country that are done by that sort of archetypal tenured professor who does very little, you know, spends very little time in the classroom and is doing amazing research has plummeted. And instead, what's gone up, most of the teaching hours in this country now are performed by adjunct faculty, whether it's grad students serving as TAs or people who are teaching on contract and making piecemeal wages, maybe $1,000, $2,000 a course per semester.
Right.
And so the cost-cutting squeeze has already come down very, very hard on the backs of faculty members. And conversely, the numbers of administrators in education or institutions of higher education in this country has ballooned. So I was just wondering if your guests could speak to that administrative bloat and the impact that that has had on educational costs.
Kirsten holds up the teaching faculty or adjunct flag there, and I'm glad for it. Henry Eyring, what about it? You talked about research, but we often hear about sort of admin creep or bloat or ballooning, as Kirsten puts it.
There has been creep in both individual administrators' salaries and also in the number of administrators employed. That has to do in part with the complexity of the university as you get, for instance, more sophisticated in your intercollegiate athletics and in some of the ancillary activities, you know, hotel quality accommodations for the students, you hire more administrators. So that's definitely something to push on. It's important to remember, though, that the vast majority of your employees are faculty members and other staff members. And so even if you cut everybody's salary at the administrative level and you cut back on the administrators, it's still critical to look at the total costs of your employment and especially to make sure that you're getting a good return on the time that full-time faculty members are investing in research.
Henry Eyring, you know, sometimes I get the feeling that we're in this crunch here, maybe almost a break point in American education. People looking, as you say, at the payout, and especially in a tough economic time, it has not been what some expected. It, for many, straining the capacity of families to pay. You and Clay Christensen and Nancy Zimfer here today talk about many things that could be done, but are they happening at a pace, you know, commensurate with the challenge of the crunch we're in here? Is there a deer in the headlights sort of paralysis problem in higher ed in this country in terms of adapting, Henry?
Well, a year or two ago, I might have agreed with that pessimistic assessment, but we're really seeing some very exciting things recently, both in terms of institutional innovation, where Nancy's talked about a lot of innovative programs in which she's engaged. But especially in the last several years, even in the last several months, we're seeing very exciting things happening in the use of online learning, the artificial intelligence class at Stanford with over 100,000 enrollees, the advance of the Khan Academy, what they're doing. I think what we're seeing is the development of tools that could lead to what I think of as both an industrial revolution and a renaissance in higher education.
Can we have both, Nancy Zimfer? Are you equally confident, an industrial revolution and a renaissance?
I see it happening. I want to follow up with our professor and say that I think we need to be worried that the balance between full-time faculty and part-time faculty has shifted considerably. But in terms of the speed with which we have to shift the balance back to instruction and academics, I think universities have to set some pretty robust targets to shift administrative costs. We've mentioned some ideas how that could happen, and I think it ought to go right into the classroom, and we can actually keep book on that. We can look at administrative expenditures and set a better balance for the core of our mission, which is teaching and learning.
It sounds as though you welcome the president's new focus on this. I've seen plenty of educators, though, nervous about it. What about your colleagues out there in the upper reaches of academia? Are they happy for this or worried that it's just going to be a pinch?
I think they're probably both, but I live on the side where we have to innovate. We should innovate. We should show the way. I think we're going to come out of this recession, and we're going to be tighter, smarter, more organized, more focused. And by and large, I believe my colleagues welcome that. They're a little downtrodden because the state scenario has been so bleak. Everybody has had a tough time, but I think universities and education are still the answer.
Let us hope that you're right. Answer plus more affordability. Nancy Zimfer, Chancellor of the State University of New York, the big system there, biggest higher education system in the country. Chancellor, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you.
And Henry Eyring in Idaho Falls, Idaho, co-author of The Innovative University. Thank you so much, Henry Eyring, for joining us.
My pleasure.
Thanks for joining us, listeners. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.